Welcome everyone to Paradigm Shifters. You've tuned into interviews with people who are changing the way they think, changing their level of empowerment, changing reality as we see it. And I got a very exciting interview with us tonight. Meet John Maisel. Is it Maisel or Maisel?
Maisel.
Maisel of firewalking fame. I think of firewalking and my feet get all sweaty. But I know that this is a really amazing tool for changing paradigms. John, do you want to fill us in? How did you get into such a thing as firewalking?
Well, I reached a point in my life where nothing was working, and I decided that I'd go explore the edge for some new possibilities. And what came to me was the possibility of doing a firewalk. And it just so happened that Tony Robbins was coming to town, and a friend of mine was going to it. And so I went to a Tony Robbins firewalk. It was a very interesting experience. I've always been a very enthusiastic individual, and I like to go sit on the front row. So
and you did.
I got there very early and sat in the front row and ran down to the front like good Tony Robbins people do. And so there, sitting in the middle, right where I wanted to sit, was another fellow. And he was very quiet and reserved and not very communicative. And I just enjoyed the seminar. But the thing I noticed about him, he was bright yellow. So I thought, well, this is someone that's probably sick and looking for answers. So that night, we went out to walk on the fire, and I noticed that he didn't run out like the rest of us, and so I didn't think much about that either. Until a little later, I saw him walking across the fire with the assistance of two of Tony Robbins' young men. So the next morning, I was there early again, first in line, and ran into the room, and he was sitting there again in the same seat. But this time he was bright pink. So I thought I'd better talk to him because it was such a paradigm shift to see him bright yellow one night and bright pink the very next morning. And I introduced myself to him and turned around, and his whole face was scar tissue. And he was blind. And his name was Zach. And he was from not too distant of a location from Houston. And Zach and his father had been realtors. And Zach had the terrible experience of his father opening the door on a home that they were about to show, lighting a cigarette out of courtesy so that he wouldn't bring tobacco smell into the home. But for some reason, someone had turned on the natural gas in the home and left it running. And when he lit the cigarette, it killed his father, and he was burned over, basically over 98% of his body. The only part of his body that was untouched by the fire were the soles of his feet.
Oh my God.
So I was very moved by his story. And you know, he had hearing aids, his hearing had been affected and he'd been blinded.
He was coming in to meet the fire, hey?
What he told me that morning changed my life. He said, I've been living with the pain of that moment for all these many years. And he said, the only thing left that I had to risk was the soles of my feet. And he walked the fire very successfully that night. And he told me that he felt like he had somehow raised a veil of fear. So I was so moved by that experience. And we had a longer conversation, which we don't have time to talk about. But the thing, I left there and sort of made myself the promise that if I could learn how to teach people how to walk on fire and change one life like that, it would give great meaning and purpose to my life.
Well, so, can I ask you something? This is going to sound kind of plebeian, but what kind of job did you have before? What was your service in the world before this?
Well, I've been in retail sales and for my entire life. Our family started a business in Galveston, Texas in 1935, which I still manage.
Oh, okay.
Among my other activities, along with doing motivational seminars all around the world. certifying individuals as firewalking instructors. And my partners in Sweden, Rolf and Osa Beckman, they, and along with myself, certified the first master's class, where we certified master instructors in Costa Rica 3 years ago.
Oh, well, were you already doing motivational speaking before you started firewalking, John?
I had been a Course in Miracles instructor. I'm really not an instructor. I had been a Course in Miracles facilitator for many years, and I held classes at Unity churches and had a significant number of followers that were, I don't really consider them students. Maybe I shouldn't even use the maybe the word is fellow seekers. You know, my philosophy is that the master should not be judged by the number of students or followers that he has. The master should be considered a master based upon the number of masters that he has awakened. So
I love
that's
that.
Sort of
yeah,
the path that I've followed in my life is one of humility.
Oh, well, I have a lot to say about that because I also heard you play piano, and I think you can be really proud of that, John. But in any case, going back to the firewalking, let's tell everybody what they can expect. What are the benefits of firewalking?
Well, probably the most important benefit is to learn how to embrace fear and transmute it into excitement. There's so much talk about overcoming fear, and actually fear can be very useful. If you step off the curb and someone screams the bus is coming, the adrenaline that's associated with fear will usually motivate you to get out of the way of the bus. So it does have a place in our life, but it's when we become consumed by fear, because every decision we make is a simple choice. It's either love or fear. So when the point of reference that you're constantly using to decide how to direct your choices in life is based upon fear-based thinking and feelings of fear, it dramatically limits your ability to truly see the vast beauty of nature and understand that this universe is here to love and support us.
Yeah, because a lot of people's fear leads to a focus on security, which defines ways of sort of social programming, doesn't it?
Well, security is the great illusion. There is no such thing as security.
Exactly. Well, there is a little more if you feel like you can empower yourself consistently instead of being limited by social programs. You see what I mean? Is there's a certain amount of access.
I can concur with that, right. Yeah. However, when you think you're in this all alone, rather than having faith in higher power, whatever you choose to call that higher power that will help you direct and make choices that are beneficial for you. I believe that is the true source of power is faith.
I think that's true. One of my favorite interviewees is Peter Calhoun, who is on the other side now. But his major thing is he said, we don't know how powerful we are. We're the most amazingly powerful beings, but we don't let ourselves be. Would you say that firewalking was access to that power as well, that you bring in the spirit as well, of course?
One of the things that I teach when I'm conducting firewalks is the importance of points of reference. And there's a simple meditation that your listeners can try for themselves. We're so programmed historically and socially and through the school systems and to see things a certain way. And the power of the firewalk is that we're taught that fire always burns. However, the simple little meditation is to buy some matchlight charcoal and go someplace where it's quiet and private, where it's safe to have an open fire. Obviously, with the drought situation in so many locations now, this has to be a consideration. But let the coals burn down. And rather than seeing a red hot fire, begin the meditation by studying the black areas between the coals. And this is how I teach my students to ask permission from the fire to cross safely. I don't do the rah-rah that so many other firewalking instructors do, because I think you lose a huge opportunity. But when you just take those charcoal briquettes and you can start looking into the realm of all possibilities, the void that actually exists, it is, I know Wayne Dyer is one of my favorite authors, and he talks about that space between the breath, that, and the space between thoughts. That, and that's, of course, Eckhart Tolle also mentions that space between thoughts. So I offer the possibility that rather than seeing a red hot coal that's there, and many of them, that you attempt to allow your mind to relax so that this inner vision can see the void that exists. And firewalking, believe me, can be and has been quite dangerous for people that don't know what they're doing. And the reason I'm bringing this up is, as I mentioned, natural light charcoal. Everything that we do around a firewalk teaches the power of personal intention. So every piece of wood that goes into building our fire has the intention, ice cold fire, put into the wood.
Okay.
Charcoal briquettes have the intention of cooking efficiently. And that would include feet. one of the worst firewalking incidents that I'm aware of is that when some group decided that there was nothing to, they went to a regular firewalk with a professional instructor, and they decided, well, there was nothing to this. And of course, that's arrogance, and arrogance always burns. And so they got their charcoal briquettes and they laid out their fire and they walked across, and I ended up in the hospital with second degree burns.
Oh my God.
So
have you ever burned yourself, John?
Yes. And very early in my firewalking career, I was at an advanced training, and a beautiful lady by the name of Sarah Raintree and I sort of got into a competition on a 40-foot fire to see who could walk the furthest, the slowest. And I got a coal stuck between my toes.
Oh, no.
And couldn't get rid of it, and got quite a nasty little burn. But due to the techniques that I was taught at that point in time by our master instructors, I was able to heal, which was pretty black in flesh, in less than a week.
Oh, wow.
Because the intention of that fire was not to burn feet. And it was my arrogance that allowed me to be burned. And it wasn't about competition.
Well, did your competitor burn herself?
Yes.
Oh, she did?
I burned myself trying to go a little further than her.
I don't mean to laugh at you guys, but, you know, it's all of us can.
Well, it was early in the firewalking movement. I've been involved with Tolle Burkan, was the founder of the Western firewalking movement. And as I mentioned, I went to Tony Robbins' firewalk and had inspirational experience, and I asked them through prayer to what was my next step, and I had signed up for a magazine subscription, and in the subscription they sent a free book, which was Dying to Live, which was the story of Tolle Burkan and the firewalking movement. So I knew that Tolle was a person who I was to follow in his footsteps, and I became his assistant for about 7 years. I was one of his assistants, not his
only. Well, now, did he use firewalking to live when he was dying? Is that what I'm assuming from what you said?
Well, excuse me. It's a complicated story, and the answer to that is yes and no.
Okay.
It did change his life, and I think that's a question better answered by Tolle than myself. But if people are interested, he's written many books. It's Tolle, T-O-L-L-Y, Burkan, B-U-R-K-A-N, and he's pretty much retired from firewalking. He had some serious accidents in his life where he injured his neck. And I'm not even sure that he's done a firewalk in a little while. So what is your next question?
What did you, like, it's interesting to me. You're already a motivational speaker. You're already a spiritual teacher or, what do you call it, facilitator. What happened after you started firewalking? Did you notice changes in your own, like, empowerment, in your own relationship to life? And can you share any little stories like that?
You know, I believe that the first major shift was the understanding that elemental forces were forms of consciousness.
Okay. I love that.
Just as now I am working with the mineral kingdom. And I've always had a fascination with crystals, and remarkable crystals seem to be attracted to me. Here on my land at Eagle Heart in Friendswood, Texas, I've just installed a little more than 2,500 pounds of rose quartz. We have what is a water wheel and a love wheel, which is a very interesting meditation device, and includes part of the umbilical cord from my godson. In the center of the, my godson's mother was guided that this was supposed to be part of the ceremony that we did to activate the crystals. And we've got about 750 pounds of a stone called green mist, which is a stone which is considered sacred by many of the Buddhist movements.
What kind of a stone is it?
It is, I don't know that you could definitely call it crystal, but it is. It has this mint green color that, and I'm learning more about it as I meditate.
It's not like the Andara crystal, is it?
No, this is not so much like quartz at all. It's more of a granite, and not even really granite. I'm not an expert on this sort of thing. They just talk to me. I hate to say that. For the whole world, but I studied with a lady by the name of Ganga Ji out at the Esalen Institute many years ago, and she taught me how to stop my mind, and that was tested by the University of Texas Medical Branch, one of their doctors, and I was able to take the EEG machine and flatline it through the meditation techniques that she taught me.
Wow, that's pretty powerful. But
one more... Well, it was a remarkable experience, and I didn't go there to prove anything, but I was curious about one of the techniques that we teach in our advanced trainings, and I wanted to see what the brainwaves were doing while I was doing that particular technique. But see, the Ganga Ji, I had a remarkable experience where I was with her alone and with her husband, this gentleman by the name of Eli Jackson Bear, who's a very famous hypnotherapist, and I think he's still a teacher along the western coast of the United States. But I was in their presence for a prolonged period of time in some very hot water at Esalen Institute. Time ceased. Just like when you're in the fire, there is no time.
Mm-hmm.
So time ceased because time is the great illusion. And time ceased to exist, and they left, and I was still there just buzzing. This was the morning after I'd had the class that day. And when I was walking back to my room, I heard this sound. It sort of went whoop, whoop, like that. And the sun was just coming up, and I was looking around. It didn't sound like a bird. And about that time, a monarch butterfly went right past my face.
Wow.
And my mind had become so still that I could hear the sound of a butterfly's wings. It was one of the most profound experiences of my entire life, because when you think about television and music and all the external stimuli that we have in everyday life, commercials, like billboards, it's why it's so important to get out into nature so that you can still the mind, because the mind is the wild horse.
Yeah, it sure is. Yeah. So when you're doing firewalking, you have to still your mind, don't you?
Yes, and as I spoke about seeking out the path through the fire, I've actually had fires where I teach my students to walk around the fire and find their own individual. I am not a guru. I am not seeking followers. I'm seeking fellow masters. Because it's very lonely for a guru. You're a guru, and then all these people ask and fix me. I'm really not looking for that. I'm looking for playmates. And in my community of firewalkers, that some have been with me for almost 20 years here in Texas, coming to one of our firewalks, the energy that is the collective consciousness of firewalk, of these masters, there are several master firewalk instructors who come here also, and so being in that energy field, it is sort of a fulfillment of another one of my personal philosophies, is always sleep at the foot of the master. Don't get your information from the source whenever possible, because every generation away from the source is distilled with that person's personal experience. And so the fire here at Eagle Heart, when we walk around the fire and you're in this meditative state, we have, depending on the energy of the group, specific types of music that we play. A lot of times it's my partner, Rolf Beckman's music. He's a composer and a genius. And we use his music, but he's also a master percussionist. So it brings people into the right state of mind to go over the edge, to be open to possibilities. What happens, what I teach is that when a core belief collapses, the mind is it's almost like it's concentric, and it's constantly, every time it has a new experience, it may go out to the edge, but then it comes back to the center and tries to find the most appropriate response. So when you've been taught your whole life that fire always burns, and that's the edge, and you come back and there are no appropriate responses to allow you to take your feet and take them across the fire, then what happens when you follow this guidance, what I call uncommon certainty, this guidance within you that you know without knowing how you know, but it just feels so right. When you take that first step, because you're invited in by the fire, and then I tell people, don't just go with the invitation. Wait for that gentle nudge in the back of the shoulders. And when you feel that, then you take your steps. And you will not be burned.
So what happens if a person's new? Say I've never done it before, and I come and I'm standing there as you begin this whole program with all these different people who are maybe more experienced, and I'm terrified. What happens?
Well, we have a session before we all go out, and where we share. We set our intentions individually.
Okay.
And everything, again, everything that we do as a firewalk is intentional. The fire is built in an intentional way. The fire at this particular firewalk, you know, we're celebrating our 20th anniversary.
Oh, wow.
Here.
That's great. Oh,
at
wow.
Eagle Heart. Yes, this on the 21st of June. And that'll be the summer solstice. And there's a lot of events going on then. That fire, when we are setting that fire, everything is intentional. From the time the sun comes up in the morning at our firewalking site that we've used for 20 years, it's surrounded by rose quartz, and it has a copper grid above the top area, which goes down into the earth and is connected to crystals in the earth. So, you know, crystals hold memories. And you can program crystals. And so all of these crystals, particularly the rose quartz, because it's one of the most effective heart-opening crystals of all, this place is called Eagle Heart. So the eagle allows us to fly up above the mundane, and the heart portion would be the rose quartz that helps us keep our heart open so that our intuitive mind can guide us effectively. Did I complete that thought, or did I leave you?
You did.
I'm still
scared. I'm intending.
I'm not sure. I'm not sure that I answered your question. I have walked thousands of times.
Okay.
And as long as I'm humble, every time I walk, it's the first time. The best explanation I've ever had from firewalking came from a six-year-old child. I was doing a very large corporate walk in the Virgin Islands, and the owners of the company came up to me and said, "We've got this remarkable young man, and his family have brought him for his birthday, and he wants to walk on fire." And I said, "That's great. How old is he?" And they said, he's 6 years old." And I said, "Well, there's no way."
Oh,
I said, "This is a corporate walk, and that's just not something I'm willing to risk. But I will talk to the family." So the next day, the family and I had lunch, and the young man and me, when we finished lunch, I sat down with the young man, and I said, "What makes you think that you could walk safely across 1,400-degree coals and not get burned?" And this six-year-old child looked me eye to eye, left eye, took total control of the situation. He said, "Mr. John," he said, "actually, I'm not going to walk on the coals." And I said, "You're not going to walk on the coals, but you want to go firewalking." So that's correct. He said, "There's an energy field that exists just above the coals, and I will walk on that energy field, and I will not get burned."
Now, how did he know
so
that?
So the next night.
Is he just intuitive?
Well, the next morning, after the conversation with the young child, I asked his parents. I said, "How long did it take y'all to teach him that?" And they said, "This is nothing. You should hear the other things." So this young man is being homeschooled in a remote area, so he's not socialized, and so that he can bring wisdom to mankind. And I feel very blessed that I was able to be part of his process, that he walked four times that night, and to the awe of about 350 people. It was the whole show. It was quite an experience in the Virgin Islands.
And how long ago was that? Do you know how he is now? I mean, has it made a... Of course it's made a...
You know, I would imagine he's probably 12 years old, something like that, 5 or 6 years ago is when we had that experience. And he is just one of those very, very special human beings. And, you know, I think we're seeing more and more of them in some of these shows on TV, these amazing talents that these children have, with the voices of opera singers and on, the violinist, the child, all these child prodigies that, you know, they've been around forever, especially in the musical world. But it's, and now that we have the ability to show the world what is possible, it's remarkable.
Well, you know, it's interesting because you said he is homeschooled and he hasn't been basically socialized. And I keep thinking, you know, where you have that kind of we don't have the limitations supplied around people. Do you think they reach for a much higher reality? And what happens when you're working with a big corporation? Do they reach collectively for a higher reality, for a more magical reality or more empowered reality? What's your experience on that?
Well, you know, I don't know that they would ever be attracted into the corporate world. I'm a strong believer in the law of attraction. And I think that they find their own, or they create their own reality based upon unlimited thinking. You know, the corporate world is a relatively new phenomena for human organization. I'm not sure that capitalism won't be the destruction of democracy because of the corporate world. And now that we have legally declared corporations to be equal with humans, it seems like one of these movies where the robots become equal with humans.
Well, I want to go back into my question, because this is really relevant to what you're saying right now, which is you said you were doing corporate firewalks, and I wondered if the corporation that you were doing corporate firewalks with was actually showing more of an evolving consciousness collectively or individually? You know what I mean? Is did the CEOs suddenly get advanced? Did people wake up? What happened? Did the whole corporation begin to act enlightened?
I did a firewalk for Applied Materials in Hawaii sometime, I guess maybe 8 or 10 years ago. And it really spoke to the power of the firewalk. The CEO was a gentleman by the name of Mike Splinter. And he was attempting to lead his team into a whole new paradigm where Applied Materials was, they were considered to be one of the top, I think, computer chip makers are in the computer world. They're just one of the very top players. Mm. And so Mr. Splinter wanted to lead his army of corporate soldiers, if you want to call them that, into this new paradigm. And so he decided that having a firewalk where he would walk and then lead the group into, they weren't aware of the shift that was about to take place in their corporate environment, and just lead them all into the auditorium. And it turned out to be quite a powerful experience. He walked a 20-foot fire, not a typical 12-foot fire that you see at many firewalking events. Not only did he walk it, he walked it twice. And it was very inspirational to watch the individuals that were there. He inspired many of his people. And I've done firewalks for companies. I do one firewalk that's called the end of the road. A bend in the road. It's not the end of the road unless you fail to make the turn. And so the firewalk is a very, very powerful metaphor.
So what happened with the corporation?
Does
Applied Materials now act in a more vaulted or unlimited
I go from whatever is presented to me, and I give everything I have to give, and I support, and when I leave, I ask Spirit what's next, and I never look back.
Well, I think
so.
That
I don't keep score as such. Well, I don't want to be like, it seems to me that's egotistical to sort of, you know, like have a track record. I know based upon what I see here at my center, I've had many people that have had some fairly severe burns come here and have emotional healings.
Hmm.
And many people that have had addiction challenges that have come here and who have walked the fire and then been able to really break loose from whatever it was that was holding them in this addiction cycle. The people that have come and healed relationships, husbands and wives, there's many reasons. For me, it was healing a relationship with my son also.
Mm.
We had become estranged because I didn't know at the time that my son was facing some challenges, which I learned about later. But it allowed us to have an experience. The problem with modern society for young men, you know, there are no rites of passage.
Right.
You know, unless you're part of a religious organization that has specific rites of passage that everybody knows you're now a man. The closest thing we have is to join in the military now. But that's not always a father-son relationship.
Mm-hmm.
So the firewalk does offer the possibility for father and son that are having challenges to come and bond over the fire. Fire is a form of purification.
Yeah,
it takes base metals and purifies them.
Was your son a transformation, eh? Was your son a teenager, or how old was he at the time?
He was graduating from high school, and he had just started college.
Okay, that's a really good time. That was wonderful that you did that. How amazing, eh?
Well, it surprised me he was willing to do it.
Yeah, I think that's wonderful.
It turned out he had fire immunity, and he learned it that night. He's one of these people that I watched him walk 160 feet across the fire one time, one step at a time, on almost a 1 second count.
Wow.
So, and I've seen other people, I mean, from time, I do what I'm guided to do. The fire tells me that I've had the fire actually, when we've raked it out, tell me, here's where you're supposed to stand. And I just go stand on the fire. It turns off the fire in a couple of spots. That one time I did that and sort of seared all the hair off of the top of my foot.
Uh-oh.
And but didn't receive one burn on the bottom of my feet.
Wow.
How does that work? I have no way of knowing. We have regularly these little, I think recently they showed what they called a fire tornado, the vortex of energy that came out of the earth. One of the fires that was in, I believe it was in San Diego, I can't remember, but it was in Southern California. And they showed that tornadic, sorry, we call them fire dragons. And we have them quite frequently here because the place where we've been holding the fire watch was a huge energy vortex. And
oh,
so it's not unusual for one of them just to spin up out of the earth and dance across the phone.
Hmm. Well, here's something funny from high school. I remember we used to take a Bunsen burner. We take a paper cup with water in it and hold the Bunsen burner lit under the bottom of the cup. And nothing would happen except the very top rim of the cup would burn. It's not the same, but it's the same, isn't it? Isn't it the same principle?
I don't understand the physics of that. I'm not sure that I can answer. I can tell you this, that in the early stages of the firewalking, there was a lot of, you know, being in the Southern Baptist area of the United States, and actually being, I was raised Southern Baptist, so I caught a lot of, I guess you'd call it criticism from people about who didn't understand. And now it's a lot more mainstream, and that's pretty much gone away. I'm a Paul Harris Fellow in Rotary, and I actually, at that point in time, it's one of the higher levels of recognition for Rotary, and I'm also a district, I won the district award for being one of the good guys, and but I actually get to Rotary president tell me that in the early stages of my fire walking career, I was so excited, so I wanted everybody to be as excited and walk on fire. And they took me to lunch one day, and they asked me if I just talk about sports again, because I'm a big sports fanatic. But you know, it's a core belief that fire always burns, but it doesn't.
That's wonderful. Well, I want to ask you a little bit about the history of firewalking. Is it from the Philippines, or where was it that it all was beginning way back?
Well, firewalking in its various forms has taken place about as long as I think. Here's what's very important, I think, to understand about firewalking. The humans are the only life form on the planet Earth who can have communion with fire.
Hmm.
There's not any other life form on the planet that can have communion with fire. And so my rabbi friend, he shared with me in his tradition, in his rabbinical training, that to have communion means to have an equal partnership.
Oh.
Very different from the other, like the word prayer from my teaching, learning what Aramaic and the meanings of certain words that were translated. The word prayer means to expect, not
prayer,
petition.
Prayer means to expect? Oh, my.
To expect.
Okay.
And there's been several books, Radical Faith, and several books that have been written about that. But it's this expectation that creates our realities. What you expect and feel, and the words that you use have such incredible power.
So would you say intention and expectation, if the intention is sitting and devising your expectation, is it?
Well, if you think of communion being an equal partnership.
Yes.
And you think that intention, if you were going to create a sculpture, you'd have to first create a form. And intention is how the mind creates a form that God can fill with substance.
Nice.
So in my, I'm also a master prosperity teacher, and when we talk about manifesting prosperity,
right,
we teach the how is not up to us. We have to get a clear picture, the clear picture of crossing the fire. I teach five steps to walking on fire. One is know where you are. Two is know where you're going. Three is have a plan. Four is follow the plan. And five is expecting the best. And if you can't expect the best, don't walk.
I love that. Actually, that's great. That was very good information for all of our listeners. I want to go back into the origins of, I don't know if it's origins, but where we think the history began. Isn't it about isn't it about trancing as well? Is that what they did, is for a higher connection to Creator Spirit through trance dancing and moving above the fire? Was that how it started?
It, you know, I'm not sure that there is one specific time or place because it's so broad. You have the Western world was first exposed to firewalking when the fires came to Great Britain, and they started teaching the British how to walk across fire. And one of the things they taught was, if you hold my hand, I will protect you.
Okay.
This was one of the ways. Not all, but it was one of the ways. The Cherokee Indians were firewalkers. And many times, these were rites of passage. The Vikings taught the young men to walk on red-hot steel. The virgins
of Suriname. So that's like mind over, right?
It's not mind over, it's mind into.
Okay.
Over is an arrogant word.
Okay.
Into is one where we become one with something. And so, and it is very typical of the Western world to be, because since we are a conquering nation, okay, and we're protecting the entire whole world, like God can't take care of that for us. This firewalking movement, I mean, when a woman would have her first period, and in that year they would walk across hot rocks. The kahuna would put the tie leaves on their feet and would walk across the slightly hardened lava. And this is, I mean, it is a worldwide phenomenon. Probably those who are recognized to be some of the greatest firewalkers in the world, the Kalahari Kung from the desert people, and who believe that they're part of the Dogon tribe, which is their home is Sirius,
okay.
In the constellation Sirius, that it is a multiple day event where they would go do the circle around the fire, and they would dance until the shaman would go in and take handfuls of coals and put them on his face and not be burned, and then it was time to walk the fire. All over Indonesia, there are fire ceremonies. It's everywhere. There's even in the celebration of St. Constantine and St. Helen in Greece, they have a very profound parade where they carry the cross of Jesus and the crucifix across the fire, and it's part of their annual celebration. So it is something that... See, time is a limiting element in this. And let's talk just briefly about time and fire. If you're going to cook, a steak, and you go in your kitchen tonight and you put the steak in the pan, and you come back tomorrow morning, would the steak be cooked if you don't turn the fire on?
No.
It's going to be sitting there waiting for you, right?
Right.
So... there's two elements to cooking anything, heat and time. So if you take either one of those two elements out of this experience, then there's not a burning that takes place. So what I've discovered is when I'm inside the fire, especially when I'm either staying in the fire, standing in the fire, or laying down in the fire, there's no
laying
time.
Laying down in the fire? Are you kidding?
Well, there's no time. Hmm. So, and I'm given permission, and I think if you'll go look on one of the Facebook pages under Hawk Maisel, M-A-I-S-E-L, you'll see one of the Eagle fires we did at the Masters training where I was guided to go lay out in the fire. And it's hard to believe. And your clothes don't catch on fire.
So, and you were not afraid. You're not afraid at all anymore, are you?
I'm not saying I'm not afraid. I'm saying I follow closely my guidance.
Okay.
Okay? Mm-hmm. And when if they show me these two spots where the rest of the fire is red and glowing, and I see these two black spots that are exactly the size for my feet, and I hear this inner voice that says it's safe to stand there, then I go do it.
Mm-hmm.
But that is one of the things that the firewalking offers as a possibility for potential growth is the clairaudience and clairsentience that takes place once you understand that elemental forces are forms of consciousness, and that by honoring them and by asking permission, these are some basic spiritual principles that are not frequently taught, that to honor the ancestors, to honor the devas and the overlighting devas that watch over everything that is of the land, and arm with sincere thanks and gratitude. That's
a huge paradigm shift, isn't it, for our world, which is so materially limiting or contriving, right?
Well, when you study Aramaic, there are so many basic words that were mistranslated based upon what they meant then, and in a literal sense, but not in a contextual sense. And man shall have dominion over the earth. The word dominion doesn't mean that he can do anything he wants with the earth and there's no consequence. It means he has responsibility. Now, I spent a lot of time in Costa Rica, and I was at a mass where the priest talked about the right they had to kill animals. It said in the Bible, man shall have dominion, and I had this translated, and the fellow I was with was just shaking his head. I can't believe we're at a funeral. He's talking about this. I don't know whether this guy was a horse rancher or a cattle raiser or whatever, but he was an important guy in our community, and so I went with my friend. And this insanity that we're somehow separate from everything that's out there, I mean, the space that's between all of us connects us. It doesn't separate us. And if people don't believe that, go to a ball game and come in late and feel the energy of all those people that is connected and inspires you. Or go to a funeral. Go to a funeral and walk in late and feel the energy of all those grieving people. If
and that reminds me the other day, when we were speaking on the phone about this the other day, and I asked about people being afraid, you said that people who are not ready to walk or think they aren't ready, will actually feel what you just said, the atmosphere. Is that right? They'll go into a trance or a coherent trance?
Well, excuse me, go ahead.
No, I just thought you were saying something similar about...
Everyone that comes to my firewalks is required to sign a release form.
Okay.
And they will, and there are people who come and argue, well, I'm not going to walk. And I say, that's right. And I said, there'll be 30 to 40% of the people that come to virtually every firewalk who say they're not going to walk, and then they do. They'll say, my God, this looks easy. And that's the hardest thing I have to get across to people, is that it's easy because of the vortex of energy that's created. But the thing that pierces that vortex is arrogance, and you will get burned. One of my firemaster friends, when he studied with me in the very beginning, his first firewalk, he walked across, and our intention is to have an ice cold fire. Now, how can 1,400 degrees be ice cold? I don't know, but it is. He walked across, and his son's a Marine, and he's quite a fascinating gentleman, very artistic, and so he turned around. And he walked right back across like there was nothing to it, totally relaxed, not focused. And I got about halfway to the middle of the fire, and I started to choke. and run off the fire, and he got a pretty good hit. But it left a wonderful impression on him about not being arrogant.
And because your phone bopped out, can you tell me that last part again? Did he suddenly become aware of what he was doing and lose it?
Well, we do a closure at night, and we let everyone share. We let everyone share their experience.
Right.
And so he shared with the group that I asked him what happened. I said, I saw you jump. Did you get a hit? And he said, we call it a hit. Did you get a hit? And he said, yeah, good one. And I said, were you arrogant? And he said, yes, definitely. and that's the last time. He said, I didn't get that arrogant thing, but I do now.
Well, tell me one more thing before we run out of time. Have you ever had an experience with someone, let's pick something like cancer, something of that ilk, and had an impact, or do you know about that?
You know, I've had many people that have come and with challenges that they were facing in their life, and cancer is one of them. And again, I don't keep track. If the people come back and I get a thank you, I acknowledge that and just let it go. I don't want people to think that firewalking is going to cure cancer, because there's no proof to that. And I certainly have not done any research into that. I can make the statement that the emotional damage that has been done by people who have been burned severely and who have come and walked on fire, there has been. That's why I'm doing what I do. I looked at, you know, Zach years ago. Mm-hmm. He turned from bright yellow to bright pink, and it changed his whole life. And
wow,
this was a guy for 2 years who was dipped in Clorox water for 2 years.
Wow.
To heal his body from the severity of the burns.
Well, and the trauma of the burns, as well as this incredible physical pain. Oh, my goodness. So that's a good story, isn't it?
Well, it is a story of tremendous healing, and it inspired me. And I'm very grateful for Tony Robbins, for I have trained his people in a couple of his folks over in Jakarta, Indonesia, and also a gentleman for China. And then I trained about 35 people in Bali in years past to be firewalking instructors. And that was from all over Southeastern Asia.
Wow,
over there.
What
and
a service.
Well, it you know, it's like taking that pebble and throwing it into the pond.
Mm.
And I get great satisfaction in hearing students, former students, to me, a person is only a student once they walk, they get it, and then they're an equal. This is it. They have to follow their guidance,
and they're
empowerment. But to watch these people just carry that on and listen to their language as they change their own families.
That's wonderful. So tell us about Eagle Heart.
Eagle Heart has been here for 20 years, and actually 18 years, because I was doing firewalks here before it got its name, Eagle Heart. And it's a place where it's a mythical place. The energy of the place is the energy of the dragonfly, and I love that. And I've had many psychics that have come here, and they've picked that same message up. In fact, in July here, I don't know why it is, but every year, late June, early July, the dragonflies gather here for some reason. I guess they procreate here or whatever. And so there are some days when there could be 1,000 gold dragonflies on the property. And then we've got a whole colony of what we call fire fairies, the little lightning bugs, what other people call them. That come during the summer months here, and it's sort of like Camelot, I guess. It's a 5-acre preserve right in the middle of a little community that was formed by the Quakers called Friendswood, and it's between two city parks. And I live on about maybe 1 acre, and I've allowed the other four plus acres to become a refuge for birds and butterflies and possums and squirrels and rabbits, and even the occasional bobcat comes through here, and a group of coyotes that show up every winter. I don't know where they go in the summer, but they burrow into the bank around my home in the winter. It's just this amazing, amazing place. And I've had so many people that have come here, like I say, with addictions, that will come and just sit. Recently, it's so funny, we've got this group of fairies. I don't know whether people believe in fairies, and I really don't care whether they believe or not, because I have fun with this thought system. You know, I live by this philosophy, what other people think about me is none of my damn business. And I'm just having fun living. But we recently brought a huge piece of rose quartz to honor the fairy realm, because there's this one place there where some really pretty mystical things happen, and for people that like to meditate particularly. And we put, as it was a totally gray day, this is such an amazing occurrence, this totally gray day, and we bring in this huge piece of rose quartz, two of us. It was sort of amazing how it got there. And anyway, I think it weighed about 350 pounds, and bright, bright pink. And so it's gray. We bring it down to the spot, and I clear off the energy, and I honor the fairies. And the instant that piece of rose quartz touched the ground, this plume of light pierced through the trees and hit it. And it just like somebody flipped on a 100-watt light bulb inside of that piece of rose quartz. It was one of the most mystical moments of the history of Eagle Heart. But there's just one after another. We have regular sweat lodges here. A gentleman by the name of Golden Eagle has been here recently doing sweat lodges. He's part of the Paiute Nation. We've had a number of Lakota Sioux who have come here. Our medicine woman, her name is Mary Thunder, and she's quite a famous person and travels around Europe with the Dalai Lama from time to time. Hmm. We've had Cherokee. In fact, one of the big Cherokee chiefs had to come in heart surgery at Houston Heart Institute, DeBakey Heart Institute. And before he had his surgery, a bunch of his fellow chiefs came here, heard I had a sweat lodge. They brought him here, and he couldn't go in the lodge because of his heart problems, but they all went in and did a healing ceremony for his heart surgery, which turned out quite successful.
Well, unfortunately, we have to go here, John.
I'm having so much fun. We can't do this for another hour or what?
Well, I'd love it if you come back on at some point, because this is great. Tell everybody. People can just sign on to Facebook to be your friend. John Mizell?
Yeah, it's listed under Hawk, H-A-W-K.
Okay.
Her last name is Mizell, M-A-I-S-E-L. And I would like your permission to leave them with one thought. The most important thought I have in my mind is that only the love is real.
Perfect. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for having a place like Eagle Heart and for teaching us all about walking on fire. Thanks, Don.
You have a great, great day and whatever's left of the evening, okay?
Yeah, you too. Thank you so much. I've really enjoyed this.
Namaste.
Namaste. So this is Veronica Entwistle saying, wow, that was very inspiring. I'm not going to run out the door and start walking on fire yet, but I'm certainly putting my mind around it. So I hope you've all enjoyed it. VeronicaEntwistle.com if you want to make a comment or feedback or suggest other guests or even have a session with me or to talk to John himself, VeronicaEntwistle.com. Good night. Much love to all of you. Many blessings.